From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was formed in 2004 in the town of Odessa, not far from Watkins Glen. That was the birth of Sunset View Creamery, and over the ensuing 10 years, the founders of Sunset View have become part of a growing cheese industry here, a surge in producers, really both in the Finger Lakes and across the country. This weekend marks the local industry's, well, I assume it's their largest annual event. We're going to get to that in a moment, but we want to start by welcoming our panel as we look at the growth in the cheese industry. You might have seen some news items impacting the cheese industry recently. We're going to get to all of that. And I mentioned Sunset View Creamery. Carmela Hoffman made a drive of how long, Carm?
A little over 2 hours.
From Sunset View Creamery in Odessa.
Yes.
In Odessa. Yep. Congratulations on 10 years, by the way.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. We have Carol Finger here. Carol is with the Finger Lakes Cheese Trail, works on the festival. She's sort of known as the cheese chick. Is that all right with you?
That is perfectly fine.
How many members of the Cheese Trail?
We currently have 13 members this year.
13 members. And if you're just hearing about kind of a cheese trail in sort of the same way we talk about the Finger Lakes Wine Trail, we're going to get to that in a moment. We're also pleased to have Ann Duckett, the owner of the Little Blue Cheese Shop in Rochester's South Wedge, celebrating about a year and a half now, right, Ann?
Yes, we're out of the infant phase. We're now a toddler.
You're a toddler.
We're a toddler, yeah.
And that's key because a lot of young businesses never make it to the toddler phase.
So I've heard.
Well, let me start with Carol, just a sense on the growth of the industry here. And we started the hour right at the top of the hour at noon looking at some of the numbers. For example, from 2006 to 2012, we went from about 400 artisan cheese producers in this country, by some estimates, to more than 850. Now we're looking at Wegmans. 10 years ago, about 5% of the cheeses Wegmans had were American. Now almost half. You've got the Little Blue Cheese Shop. You've got more interest in artisan cheeses and more of an American industry. What has the growth in the Finger Lakes industry been like?
Well, we've seen tremendous growth along the trail, not only of cheese makers, but of visitors to the trail. We consider ourselves a destination, a tourism destination, as well as a local business. So we can sort of track, we have open houses every year, and we sort of track our visitation, and we've seen doubled the numbers from where we started. And we formed in 2010, so we're only on our fourth year, and to see the growth already, it's tremendous. I mean, I get cheesemakers calling me all the time saying, I can't do that event. I'm out of cheese. We're going through it so fast. My business has doubled. One farm in particular, their growth is up 60% this year alone. So it's skyrocketing.
And again, the trail is about 4 years old.
Correct.
In the Finger Lakes. And when you call it a trail, that implies that people can stop by actual tasting rooms and go in kind of the way they taste wine. Can they do that?
That is correct. What we did this year, because we ran into some problems in the past where people don't understand that these are working farms, so sometimes hours aren't set. What we did is we made destination and non-destination farms. Mm-hmm. So if you look at our map, you will realize that 8 farms of the 13 have set hours, and you can visit based on their hours. The other 5 are by appointment or are there for open houses. So we just are trying to make it easier for people, because doing the cheese trail is nothing like doing the wine trail. The wine trail, you sort of pull out one driveway and into the next.
Yep.
The cheese trail encompasses over 500 miles. Mm-hmm. So you want to know where you're going, and you want to know where if they're open before you get in your car.
help me envision a map here. Throw some darts. Where are some of the cheese producers?
Okay. So we have a new farm this year. Heaven Sent Farms is in Cohocton, which is outside of Corning. Mm-hmm. Then we go all the way over. We go through Odessa. We go through Elmira to the Nichols area. We are all the way over to Shenango Forks. So if you're looking at the southern end of the Finger Lakes, that's how it runs. Then when you come north on the Syracuse side, Four Tin Fish is probably our furthest east, which is in Conquest. And then
where is that?
That's just outside of Syracuse. It's Cayuga County. Mm-hmm. It's the, you know, just before Syracuse, if you're heading from Rochester to Syracuse.
Okay.
Right off the thruway. And then coming towards Syracuse, probably our closest to Syracuse is Miranda Cheese Company, which is in Waterloo. again, right off the thruway. So that's a very large square. Most of our farms are on Seneca and Cayuga Lakes, but they are spread out beyond that as
sure.
well.
Sure. And I think Miranda's the one that my wife and I were in last year, and I thought there was, you know, it's a little more rustic, but it's essentially, it's a tasting room, and you can taste different cheeses being made. It was so much fun being in there because they wanted to run back, and here's what we've been working on, and you can taste, and it was fascinating.
It's really fascinating, and especially, you know, some of our cheese rooms, our farm stores, really give you a flavor of what goes on the farm, you know, as far as, well, you know, we just tried this cheese, and here it is. You know, it just came out of the aging cave, and it really gives you a sense of the production on the farm versus, you know, when you go into a store, you have sort of no idea of how they come about. But when you go to the farms, like when you go to Carm's farm, you're in the cheese room, but you can look in the window right into the production room and watch them making cheese right there. Same thing with the Stabern farm, which is on Seneca Lake. You are in their tasting room, but you're watching what they're doing, and you know that's coming out and coming into the coolers in the cheese room. So it's really interesting.
All right, Carm, so 10 years ago, when you launched Sunset View Creamery, take me back a little bit. How does someone end up in a position to launch a creamery or a cheese artisan cheese production?
I was nuts. No, I actually...
Or your husband was nuts?
Well, he let me do it. We have been a family farm since 1905. So we had the basis, and the farming was not good in 2004. The financial side of it was the craps. We were losing money faster than we were making it. So we decided that we needed to do something to add value. And I'm a cook by nature, so to be able to do something with my hands and my natural talents to cook just seemed to be the thing. So I went to school at Morrisville for a 4-day crash course. I took a course from a cheesemaker from England and decided cheese was it. So I sought out the funding and said, I'm going to do it, and dragged my husband along and did it.
When was that course that you took?
At the end of 2009. Or 2003.
2003. So you went from taking that course to launching a creamery in less than a year.
Yes.
So that shows you how fast that turnaround could be. And interestingly enough, you were ahead of the curve that's become a national... This industry nationally is definitely growing.
It is.
And you were ahead of that curve. What made you think cheese in particular? I mean, if you love to cook, if you love artisan food, you don't have to go in that direction.
I just wanted something that would use our product and... I mean, I could have gone into bottling milk, but that market wasn't stable. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure that cheese was going to be a stable market either. But
right.
And one of the problems I had was convincing lenders that this was going to be a successful thing, because their big thing was, what if it doesn't go?
And you can't blame them.
Carl. No, but I assured them that if I borrowed the money, there was no way it was not going to make it. It was going to have to. And we started out, we make American-style cheeses, mm-hmm. And I say that loosely. We do cheddars and Monterey Jacks and things that I knew people in my area would like. I wasn't sure that they would get into the Brie's and the, you know, the more exquisite cheeses from England and like that. So I wanted to do something that the country people eat. And that's where we started out.
Was that part of convincing the lenders that you'd at least thought through the possible market, the possible clientele? I mean, I understand lenders who either say to a restaurant or to a winery or something in agriculture, the failure rate, unfortunately, is pretty high, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of risk there.
Yeah.
You can't just go to them and tell them, I'm going to make cheese, especially ahead of that curve. You know, 2004 was a decade before things have really grown to the way they have. So I guess you had to do a lot to convince them.
I did a business plan. I contacted all the wineries in the area, the restaurants, and said, you know, if I make cheese, and these are the types I'm looking at, would you be interested? Mm-hmm. Would you purchase? And the wineries all came back with, we certainly will. And a few of the restaurants came back and said, you know, it'll depend on price point. You had to do your homework to be able to launch.
Are you in restaurants now?
I am.
Can you give me an example?
We do a lot with Verizon's
at
Glenora.
Glenora on Seneca Lake.
There's one in Hammondsport. I go through a distributor, so a lot of my stuff is, I'm not aware of where it is. Mm-hmm. But he has us in two or three of the restaurants that I know of for sure.
And what was the, was there a moment when you knew you had to stop worrying about your lenders? Was there a moment you knew, was, whether it was 04, 5, 6, or even later, that you knew?
I want to say toward the end of 2005, we'd been in business a year and a half by then. I could see that we were, the sales were picking up. So at that point, I was sort of like, I think this is going to make it, you know. We're still growing. 10 years hasn't stopped my growing pains.
Yeah, what's the difference in 10 years? What's your annual production look like now versus when you launched 10 years ago?
When we launched 10 years ago, we were doing cheese every other week. Now we're doing cheese every week, sometimes twice a week. Not too long ago, I did three times a week. So we're putting out about 8,700 pounds a year.
Now you are.
Roughly.
Do you know what you started at?
About 4,000.
All right, so you've more than doubled in 10 years.
Yep.
Would you have thought 10 years ago that you could more than double in a decade?
No, not a chance. I figured what I started with was what I would pretty much stay at. I built so that I could grow. We built a 12 by 20 walk-in cooler so that we could grow if we needed to. And I still have room. I could still grow more. The problem is right now the milk price is phenomenal mm-hmm. for the dairy farmer to ship his milk out the door where, you know, and that's instant, where making cheese isn't an instant gratification. You have to wait for it to age. So.
Yeah, and not long from now, I'm about to reveal my ignorance on the cheese-making process, which I think is going to be a fun part of the conversation here. But I think the good position for small businesses to be in is when you can start turning customers down just because either, you know, you're sort of tapped out, you don't have space, et cetera. Are you at the point now where you have said no to anybody?
I am just at the point where I'm going to start turning down wholesale accounts. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. There's only so much cheese available and so many hours in a day to pack it. So I'm to that point now. I hate to have to do it, but you have to say no at some point, and this is it.
And when you launched 10 years ago, you, as you say, you were thinking about sort of country clientele, mm-hmm. cheddars, Monterey Jacks, the things that you knew your people would eat.
Right.
Have you changed? Have you grown and pushed beyond that?
We have. We wanted to break away from the tradition and do something a little different. So I wanted to make Swiss. Swiss, unfortunately, requires an aging room where you can let it age at room temperature. I don't have that. So I threw together the cultures for a Swiss and a Parmesan. So we make what we call heritage. It's an Italian-based cheese. And that's gone marvelously well, unfortunately. And then we also broke away and started making mozzarella for something different. So.
And what's been the reaction?
I can't keep up.
You can't keep up?
I can't keep up.
You file that under good problems to have.
Yes, yes.
That's Carmela Hoffman, the co-owner of Sunset View Creamery and part of the Finger Lakes Cheese Trail. It's our cheese discussion of the cheese industry that has grown remarkably in the last 10 years, and as you heard from Carol Finger of the Finger Lakes Cheese Trail, really the last 4 years since the launch of that trail. Ann Duckett is also here from Little Blue Cheese Shop, and we'd love to hear from you. And you can join the conversation at 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. If you have questions about the process, and I do, we're going to get into that. Right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994, or at Evan Dawson on Twitter if you want to join the conversation online. Maybe you're listening at work, perhaps on our WXXI mobile app or WXXI AM 1370 or WEOS Finger Lakes Radio. And I know a lot of our Finger Lakes cheesemakers are listening down there at 89.5 FM. So hello to all the folks in the cheese industry who didn't have time to make the more than two-hour drive that Carm did for us today. Anne from the Little Blue Cheese Shop, what's the mission of your shop? And give me a sense for how local your offerings are.
We really want to be a regional marketplace for micro and small batch cheese and food producers, and so that's really our focus. We have had new cheesemakers come to us and say, hey, I've got this wheel of cheese. Would you like it? And we're in heaven. That's what it's all about, making that connection as often as we can to know where that farmstead and artisan cheese is coming from, who's sourcing it, who's making it, how they're caring for their animals. It all results in what we like to say, good, pure cheese. That's what we're all about.
I want to ask you about the concept of place. I remember in 2008, my wife and I were in central Italy, and we were in a town called Pienza, and we had Pecorino Pienza, not Pecorino Romano, or Pecorino Pienza. And I remember walking into a shop there, and they had, you know, and I don't remember all the details, but there was softer, younger, and then slightly firmer, older. It was the most remarkable cheese, but I always think, am I ever going to taste something like that if I'm not in Pienza? You know, I mean, what is there a sense of place to you when it comes to cheese?
Absolutely. And a lot of our cheeses, we get cheese from Utah, California, Vermont, Virginia, some obscure places you wouldn't think would want to embrace the cheese making lifestyle, mm-hmm. because it's quite a lifestyle. And so You can get that. And, you know, we're trying to educate our customers. We're trying to build a cheese community. Come in, let's talk cheese. We sample everything. There isn't anything that you can't sample at our shop. And we want to increase awareness of the regional nuances with cheese, just like with wine. A fine wine and a fine cheese, they go beautifully together.
All right, so if you taste a Finger Lakes Riesling and a German Riesling, and God forbid a California Riesling, because they do make the mistake of making it there in some places. You can taste very, very regional differences in terms of profile. Mm-hmm. Goes without saying, I guess, then, if you taste a variety of cheese from the Finger Lakes versus another part of the country versus perhaps another part of the world, mm-hmm. you'll see similarities over time?
Absolutely. And not only that, and on a much broader picture, we get to know our cheeses so well. If we carry them continuously, for instance, we carry a number from our area, obviously, the Finger Lakes. But we can tell when we cut a wheel open that it's younger, it's older. Was it a dry summer? Did it rain too much?
Wow.
What were the animals eating?
I mean, it sounds exactly like in the wine industry.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah, and we enjoy that the most. And we'll tell that with a customer, you know, share that with a customer when we're cutting a wheel, which you know, time stops in the shop when we get a new wheel and we cut the wheel. It's just a moment where there's nothing to be said. Just get a piece quickly, you know, off that wheel. We love doing that. But yeah, if you stop to think about the broader picture of the world of cheese, literally where everybody is and what they're doing, you know, can you put a cow in a rocky terrain somewhere and ask them to give you great milk to make great cheese? You need a sheep or goat, you know. So every region, just like with us, we've, you know, every region of the country, the world has their own specialty and why they're good at it.
We're talking to Ann Deckett from the Little Blue Cheese Shop in the South Wedge of Rochester. And it's fun for me to see in the last, especially the last 7 to 8 years, the revitalization in the South Wedge, and your shop slots right in there. It's an exciting place to be, isn't it?
It is, yes. It's uniquely human, and old timers support what's going on there. You know, we're not far from universities, so we have that component of new cheese lovers, a palate that's traveled around and knows cheese. So we get everybody from new folks to connoisseurs, and we're happy to open the doors and have them in our shop.
And speaking of travel, Ann, I was reading, and I think it was in, I want to give proper credit, I think it was in City Newspaper that they reviewed your opening, and they mentioned a little bit of your background in the Vermont Institute for Artisan Cheese. What is the Vermont Institute for Artisan Cheese?
Lovingly known as VIAC, so the Vermont Institute for Artisan Cheese was part of a program that was established between Cornell and some folks in Vermont. And I went through Burlington and had a 9-day intensive. And the interesting thing about that program was, for a short period of time, I was considering the option of being a cheesemaker. I'm much more comfortable being a cheesemonger, much more comfortable selling than making. It's a dedicated life, a commitment that my husband one time said, honey, I don't want to wake up with goats. So I put that to bed, so to speak,
yeah.
that idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had a 9-day intensive program. People from Brazil and India, and one of our New York State cheesemakers actually went through the program with me, and now I'm buying cheese from her. It's just a wonderful way to be educated, and unfortunately the program has now closed. Mm. They've moved that education into another college, but it was a really wonderful experience.
See, Ann and I have something in common here. I am the worst self-promoter, and I don't mean to bring it up for anything other than to say, to draw a comparison. So when my book on Finger Lakes Wine came out, it's amazing how many people said, don't you want to open your own winery now? And I said, no, it's exactly the opposite. I've seen what it takes, and I don't have it.
Yeah.
I can write about it. I can consume it and enjoy it.
That's very true.
But there are some of us who would rather be mongers or writers as opposed to makers.
This is true.
And I feel like you and I are in that category. We're talking about the rise of the cheese industry in this country, and especially the Finger Lakes, and Carol Finger from the Finger Lakes Cheese Trail. I want you to tell us about, is this the biggest weekend of the year for your trail?
It sure is.
The Finger Lakes Cheese Festival, which is at Sunset View Creamery.
Correct.
What's going on Saturday?
Saturday we have this is our third annual festival. It runs from 10 to 5 at Sunset View Creamery in Odessa, which is just outside of Watkins Glen for anybody who's trying to get a sense of where that is. this came about because, as I said earlier, it's so hard to do the cheese trail. You can't really do it in one day. You have to pick a few creameries and visit them, and that is your day. So we wanted a place where everybody could come and meet all the cheesemakers and try all the cheeses at once. So therefore, the Finger Lakes Cheese Festival was born. This year, we have 12 of our 13 creameries participating in the event. Plus, on top of it, we really wanted to make it a foodie event. So we have cooking demonstrations, we have wine and cheese pairing seminars, we have beer and cheese pairing seminars, and we have cheese making classes. So that is definitely the foodie aspect. Plus, we invited a lot of our friends and neighbors. So we have farm products, we have handmade artisan crafts and that sort of thing. Local food producers and food vendors will be there. Then, of course, we wanted to do a lot for the kids. So we have a petting zoo so people can go out and actually pet farm animals. We have goat milking, so kids can come, or adults if they want, can come and actually milk a goat. We have games for the kids that sort of harken back to the old-time country fair feel. We have hay rides and farm tours. And it's really just a way to spend a day on a farm and sort of acclimate yourself to what it means to be on a farm. And it's just a wonderful event. So whether you're a family or a foodie, you're going to find something to do at this event that you just don't get to do every day.
10 to 5 Saturday.
10 to 5 Saturday.
And if they haven't been, most of us have not been to Odessa, and don't worry, Carmela, we'll be there soon. you've done this to yourself with your success. How do they find directions on how to get there, Carol?
If you go to our website, flcheesetrail.com, we have a cheese festival page. We have all the directions from any which way you're coming. Honestly, from Rochester, the easiest way is to take the thruway to the Geneva exit, get off, go into Geneva, get on 14, and from 14 at the top of Seneca Lake to Carm's Place, it's one turn. You follow 14 all the way down the lake through Watkins, through Montour Falls, and take a left onto County Road 14, 3 miles at the end. Cheese fest.
It's a piece of cake.
It really is. It's so much easier than people think. It's
okay.
One turn.
On Twitter, Caleb asks, which, if any, of these cheesemaker sites are family friendly? And so first of all, to answer part of Caleb's question, with the festival, it's aimed at family.
It's absolutely aimed at family.
But to Caleb's broader question about if you go to some of these places throughout the year, are they generally family friendly, or, you know, are some more than others?
Certainly, most of the farms that are open are definitely family friendly. In other words, our destination farms, they're family farms, so they welcome families. When you go to Carm's Place during the year, you can take a self-guided tour anytime you go, so you get to see the animals and you get to see how the farm works. And that's great fun for the kids, you know. And then when we do our open houses, we try to put kids-specific activities in, from hay rides to, like, you know, combing and brushing the cows, to, you know, whatever the farm has. If you go to a perfect example of what I consider one of the best family-friendly farms is Side Hill Acres Goat Dairy, which is down not too far from Carm. You can go in and milk the goats and play with the babies any time of year. It's not a set time, and there is nothing like, I don't know if anybody's ever seen a kid or played with a kid, but they are just so much fun. They just love people, and they hop around and like to jump in your lap, and they want to be held like lap dogs. So that's a great farm to visit with the kids. So, yeah, the short answer is yes.
And the website for the trail that they can learn more about these places, what's the website for the trail?
flcheesetrail.com.
flcheesetrail.com. So, okay. Caleb, hope that answers your question. Catherine is asking about the difference between cow, goat, and sheep's milk cheeses, and there's a lot to explore there. Let's take the shortest break in radio. We'll come back. We'll hit that, and we're also going to talk about some rather significant news lately. You might even have seen Chuck Schumer, New York senator, talking about making sure that the cheese industry here, whether it's stores or whether it's makers, aren't hurt by a new proposal out there. We're going to explore that as we talk about the rise of the cheese industry next on member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, is it worth spending more for organic food? A new study sheds light on possible health benefits, and we've convened a diverse panel to tell us all about it. From organic certification to what the evidence says, we'll explore what organic really means for consumers. That's coming up next hour on Connections with Evan Dawson.
Eye-opening documentary Fed Up plays limited showtimes this week at The Little. Upending conventional wisdom of why we gain weight and how to lose it, Fed Up unearths many little-known secrets of the American food industry. Narrator Katie Couric leads us through this potent expose that seeks to uncover why, despite media attention as well as government policies to combat childhood obesity, our country faces generations of American children who will now live shorter lives than their parents. Learn more at thelittle.org.
I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. You might have seen the headline recently, ban wood-aged cheese. The FDA says yes, New York's artisan cheesemakers disagree. And I want to quote from, you might have seen it in the Democrat and Chronicle. This is an article I pulled from Syracuse.com. Here it is. It's been a debatable question, how safe is cheese aged on wood? But it's a question a lot of people are asking in the wake of a recent U.S. Food and Drug Administration ruling that says the use of wooden boards as a surface for aging cheese is unsanitary. In particular, the agency is worried that wood might spread the toxin Listeria. But artisan cheesemakers in the United States and abroad have been using wood for centuries and, in fact, consider it to be vital to the flavor of certain varieties. That's the start of the debate there. Well, in the wake of this, Chuck Schumer came out and said, this is an industry that's growing strong, let's not hurt them, etc. Let me kind of go around the room and find out more about this issue, because if you're not making cheese or selling it, you're not thinking about how it's aged. But wood-aged cheese, let me start with Carmela. This story is, how significant is it to you and the industry in the Finger Lakes?
To me, it's not significant because I age in vacuum-sealed packages, so I don't use wood. To the industry in the Finger Lakes, it's extremely important issue. A number of our cheesemakers use wood. And our argument is if it's cleaned and sanitized appropriately, then that's not an issue. We also feel that because we import so much cheese from the European nations that is aged on wood, if they aren't going to ban imports, then they really shouldn't ban us aging on wood. I think ultimately it's going to work out in our favor, but
the FDA is going to back off this?
I hope so, but they tend to be the wolf, and we tend to be the sheep. So, well,
Carmela, you're talking about your colleagues aging cheese on wood. What's the reason you would do that?
Because of the type of cheese they make. They do a natural age or a natural rind cheese. So they have a hard rind on their cheese versus what I do, which doesn't have a rind. And certain cheeses just require that wood aging to get the flavor that they need.
That's Carmela Huffman from Sunset View Creamery, one of our guests here, and they're the creamery. That's the is that the official name of a cheesery, a cheese production? Is that right?
Creamery.
A
yeah.
creamery. Okay, yeah. So the creamery is in Odessa, outside Watkins Glen. They're hosting the Finger Lakes Cheese Festival on Saturday from 10 to 5. Carol Fingers here from the Finger Lakes Cheese Trail, and Duckett is here from the Little Blue Cheese Shop in the South Wedge of Rochester. And Anne, when this story came out about the FDA looking at wood aged cheese. What was your first reaction about the potential impact and your store in general?
I think it was a very good opportunity to bring attention on behalf of the cheesemakers, again, to what they do. Again, with the flavor and the aging, we have talked to cheesemakers who want very specific wood from a very specific forest and want to know where the source is for that wood. Obviously, you're not going to age cheese on something that's very soft, so you want to be very particular about the wood, just like the type of cheese that you're making. I was watching the story develop through my membership through the American Cheese Society, and again, I think it was a perfect opportunity for cheesemakers and cheese lovers. I mean, Facebook lit up there where there were, you know, sign this petition, talk to your assemblymen, get out there, just do what you can. This is an important issue. And so much, in fact, that at this year's American Cheese Society conference next week, they will be having a representative addressing the masses, I'm sure, from the FDA to talk about this specifically.
You get a sense that there's enough momentum to stop it.
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful. But again, you know, the FDA is the ruling factor.
Yeah, yeah. And okay, and so yeah. If a customer comes into the Little Blue Cheese Shop and says, this is a wood-aged cheese, if this cheese had not been aged on wood, if it had been aged at some other method, what would the difference in flavor and aroma be? I mean, it's impossible to know exactly, but what's generally the answer?
Well, it is, but, you know, you're also talking about cave-aged, not cave-aged, wood boards, not wood boards. Again, it all depends on what cheese the cheesemaker ultimately wants to have and that flavor profile. It's much like, you know, aging a wine in wood or stainless steel.
Right.
So what's the outcome of that product that you want?
Mark on Twitter says, loving this discussion on cheese. So excited to hear about the trail's growth. But what is an aging cave? Well, you just mentioned it. And so we've talked about aging on wood. Carmela, you mentioned an aging cave earlier. Do you have an aging cave?
I don't have a cave. I have a walk-in cooler.
Okay.
I age in a cooler. An aging cave, in some instances on our trail, they're actually built back into the ground so that they're partially ground sided, and then, you know, wood or whatever on the inside. But an aging cave could be as general as a place to age cheese at certain temperatures and certain humidities.
Okay, so it's temperature and humidity that you get from a natural environment.
Yes.
But you don't need it. Again, you have refrigeration, you
said. Right.
Okay. So you're getting a sense for how cheese is made. And as I mentioned earlier in the hour, Catherine on Twitter wanted to know about the differences among cow, goat, and sheep's milk cheeses. Does that cover all of them? Again, look how ignorant I am. I mean, there have to be more than just cow, goat, and sheep. Does that cover all of them? Or
there's water buffalo.
Water buffalo.
Water
buffalo.
Mm-hmm. I should have known buffalo cheese. Is that it? Lars?
That I'm familiar with and that we could carry
then
in our shop.
Okay. In our area,
yeah.
All right, but so before I get to Carmela on what she has and the way they make it, Anne, have you seen, is there an easy way to describe the differences in profile among cow, goat, and sheep cheeses?
Easy way. They can all be aged, so you can get a nice, firm, hard, well-aged cheese from each one.
Okay.
Exactly. I tend to find personally that there's a bit more of that delicious butteriness, that golden hue in a nice cow's milk cheese. You know, you want a fresh, young cheese, mainly goat, to be a nice chev. Chev just means goat, nice, fresh cheese, spreadable, soft, pasteurized, of course. And that's a whole other issue. We could spend an entire hour talking about the raw versus, you know, pasteurized issue too. But and then sheep, you know, Pecorino, Manchego, just they're all different. They all bring something different to the plate.
Chev is goat.
Yes.
Okay. And we see a lot of that in the Finger Lakes, and we see very, very good
exceptional
Chev in the Finger Lakes. Carmela, what do you make at Sunset View?
We do dairy. We do cows.
You do cows.
Yep.
Okay. So what is the process like? Give me sort of a snapshot of start to finish.
Well, for instance, this morning I was up at 4:15. Milk was coming from the cow directly to my cheese vat. And we started the process of making cheese curd today. It's a pasteurizing process because we have to, cheese curd is fresh. You don't age that. And hopefully by the time I get back, my daughter will be done. But we start out with the milk. We pasteurize it. Then we add a culture. After the culture's been in for about 45 minutes to an hour, I add rennet, which is the thickening agent. We use vegetable rennet because of our proximity to a vegetarian society, and then we let it sit. We cut the curd, heat the whey up, and then drain all the whey off, and start the process of cutting the cheese curd itself and packaging it. We'll package tomorrow, so we'll cool tonight and then package tomorrow, and it'll be done.
It'll be done in 24 hours.
Yes. Well, it's actually done in 12. They'll be done right around 2:30, 3 o'clock this afternoon.
All right. So here's where the even more ignorance comes in. So then that's done, but then you choose to hold on to it for a certain amount of time. I look at something like a beam stir. You can get a soft Gouda. You can get an aged Gouda that's a little more kind of like calcified, or you've got the kind of the harder parts of it. Is that just the cheese maker's decision on how long to hold it?
Well, if you're doing cheese curd, you don't want to hold it. We hold it overnight before we package, just because if we packaged it today, it would melt back together and become a solid block of cheese curd. We don't want that. So we hold it and cool it enough so that we can package it tomorrow. Our cheddars, we age for a minimum of 3 months. Right now, this morning I cut one that was made in 2005. Our jacks, we try to age them for a month, but quite often demand takes them before that. So they're not necessarily have to be aged.
So Tom on Twitter wants to know, is there really a difference in a cheese's taste based on what the animal was eating?
Yes, there is.
All right, Carmela, why don't you start with that?
There is a difference. Our animals are all fed the exact same thing day in and day out.
For consistency's sake?
For consistency's sake.
Okay.
Some of our farmers do a pasture management program where their cows are out on pasture. You're going to get a different flavor from that milk than you are when they come back in the barn in the winter and they're fed dry hay and grains and stuff like that. Why? I don't know. I've seen the time when cows have been on pasture and they've gotten into a wild onion, and the milk will taste like onion. It just,
and then the cheese will taste like onion.
And then the cheese
will
taste
will,
like
onion. It really
will, huh? Yeah, it does process through. I mean, you'd have to have a whole herd of cows eating that wild onion to make a big impact. But if you're doing 3 or 4 cows, you're going to definitely notice that difference.
Anne, have you seen that kind of difference?
Yeah, a lot of our cheesemakers will only do grass-fed or pasture-fed herds, and they're very particular about that. Some will choose to do organic, which takes the cheesemaking to a completely different level. It's costly. I don't know if there's more restrictions to being organic certified, but absolutely. You know, it goes back to the, was it a wet summer? What's the foliage? What are they eating? Did they get into a thicket of wild berries or something? We have one cheese that we totally love, and I describe it to newbies, new blue cheese lovers, as fruity and just delicious. And one of our New York State cheesemakers, as a matter of fact, Nettle Meadow, makes some beautiful cheeses. And on their labeling, they actually say, you know, our goats and sheep have, you know, eaten nettle and berries and, you know, whatever they find. So it does come through, yeah.
Well, and you just mentioned something that we had a question on Twitter earlier, and it goes right to my heart because I have spent years trying to become a blue cheese lover. and I'm still trying. And we had a question on Twitter from how can I get over that hump? Well, I have the same question. So is there a Training Wheels blue cheese to start?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we do to get to what the heart of the customer's likes and dislikes are, obviously. What do you like? Are you adventurous? What type of food do you like to eat? We have the most gentle blue cheeses in the shop. And then we have some that are really raucous, and that's what we say. You know, it's a party in your mouth. How big do you like your blue? Salty, fudgy? I mean, we get into describing
them. I mean, you are called a little blue cheese shop, my gosh.
Well, you would think. And I have people inquire, do you just carry blue cheese? Well, no. No, we don't. But we have a good size case that's just on the bottom, just blues.
I don't even know what defines what a blue cheese is.
Well, a blue cheese actually is you take a wheel of cheese that's aged to a certain level, to a certain age that you want to. And I was just watching something the other day on this. And so they actually, let's say, inoculate that wheel. So they'll puncture it with tongs, forks, rather. And so they inject the penicillin of choice, the blue cheese that you want to grow and nurture. And you can end up with Roquefort or a beautiful English Stilton.
That's all based on the injection?
The injection of the bacteria.
The bacteria, the penicillin.
And the veinier, as it were, the veinier the cheese, the more blue that's in it, the more color, the more you're going to get that blue flavor. So if you're trying to learn to love blue, look for a less veiny blue cheese. That's more the cheese color and less of the blue. And then that's a good way to sort of start into it.
A good rule of thumb. And so you said there are some that are all the way up to a party in your mouth. What is the blue cheese that would probably get people to call the cops and have a noise complaint?
Wow. Depending again now, because we know our wheels so well when they're coming in, if it's an older wheel or opposed to a fresher, younger wheel, Bailey Hazen, Jasper Hill Bailey Hazen, we love that cheese. And it's our go-to cheese for, strong cheese lovers. That's one from Vermont, which we totally love. Another one which sneaks up on you, which is my personal favorite, Point Reyes Blue. So it's just this creamy deliciousness and starts out very mild, very friendly, and then it just has that traditional blue finish. And so we toggle often between those two. And then, you know, everything in between, a very soft, one of our favorites is Old Chatham. We love Hughes Blue. That's where we start people out. That's the Training Wheel cheese.
You've noticed that I can't get Ann just to describe one cheese. Ann Deckett is with the Little Blue Cheese Shop in the South Wedge of Rochester. Carol Finger is here from the Finger Lakes Cheese Trail. Carmela Hoffman is here all the way from Odessa outside Watkins Glen at Sunset View Creamery, where they are hosting the Finger Lakes Cheese Festival this weekend. And Carol, for those who are just joining us, again, this is it's aimed at a number of people. The festival on Saturday is 10 to 5 at Sunset View Creamery. It's aimed at cheese lovers, foodies, but families too.
Correct. We have something for everyone. We have an opportunity for kids to get really up close and personal with the farm and experience it through the petting zoos, through hay rides, through farm tours. We have lots of things for foodies, from cooking classes. We have chef and master sommelier Christopher Bates from the FLX Wienery is doing our cooking demo.
She said wienery as in dogs, but they're sort of
it's specialty winery, artisan dogs. Right.
Yeah, really cool.
It's sort of a play on Finger Lakes Winery. But they have food that is considered comfort food, but then they put the gourmet spin on
it.
And he's making an incredible bean curd burger with cheese curd. So his seminar is at 11:30, and then we have Holly Howell, who's a sommelier. She is doing our wine and cheese pairing seminar, which is at 1:30, and then at 3:00 we have the head of the Finger Lakes Beer Trail, Teresa Hollister, who is doing our beer and cheese pairing seminar. So there's like all these great foodie things, and you can really learn and really understand. And when you have great instructors that are showing you how to use artisan cheese versus a regular cheese, and there's a huge difference. You kind of have to go back to what does artisan cheese even mean? Mm-hmm. And that really means a small batch cheese. The difference between an artisan cheese and a farmstead cheese is completely made and produced and aged on the farm, whereas an artisan cheese can be made elsewhere, but it is farm-based. And again, it's small batch. So when you use, oh, I hate to say this, but like a store-bought, like, American, like, craft single on a cheeseburger versus you put a wonderful farm fresh cheddar on a burger. Like, it, you just have to use it different. You have to understand, like, with a kefir cheese, you use a lot less of it because the flavor is so incredibly intense that if you use it like you would a regular cheese, you would just overwhelm yourself and you would go away hating it. And so we try to teach people, how do you really use artisan cheese and make it work into the flavor profiles that you really like? So
what a neat idea for a festival. And some of those names that she mentioned are really just not only kind of titans in the local industry, but they're such good people. Holly Howell, I'm amazed, has not been on this program yet. And Holly, if you're listening, I need to get you on soon. She is the kind of person that, if you kind of like wine or you want to learn more about wine, she's the least intimidating person alive who, on the flip side, knows more about wine than anybody alive. So she's just absolutely fabulous. And so it's a really neat lineup you have. People can find out more online where?
At flcheesetrail.com or on our Facebook page, which is Finger Lakes Cheese Trail.
Now, Dave on Twitter has two questions, and they're both good ones. Dave wants to know, first, why has the FDA come down on cheese and not wine or anything else aged in wood? Having written a little bit about wine, Dave, I'm going to take a quick shot of that myself, and I'll see if the panel agrees. You age wine in wood and barrel, et cetera, and you also have wine, most wine, or a lot of wine, stopped up with a cork, sealed with a cork closure. But the problems that you get from wood in wine are bacteria that is not harmful to consume. For example, some wine barrels are contaminated with a yeast strain called Brettanomyces, and it gives sort of a barnyardy, funky kind of a aroma or taste, but it doesn't hurt you to consume it. You just have to be able to stomach it. Some people actually like it. When a wine is corked, so to speak, that's TCA. But again, that just creates kind of a musty or newspapery kind of a metallic kind of a aroma or flavor, kind of mutes the flavor of the wine. It doesn't hurt you to consume it. So the FDA is not going to go after wine because the problems they have with wood are more about spoiling the taste and the aroma, but not actually health concern. Their concern about wood-aged cheese is Listeria and other things. But I would ask the panel, it sounds to me like that's just a problem with the cleanliness of the actual source of it as opposed to wood in general. I mean, I think
Correct.
The FDA seems to be overreaching there. What do you think, Carmela?
Definitely, definitely. It's more on, and I hate to say it like this, but it's more on the cheesemaker than it is on the wood. And unfortunately, Listeria can sneak in the most unlikely places. You just have to be ever vigilant. And sanitize.
Yeah, but banning wood-aged cheese is such a broad brush that it seems to be
senseless.
over-penalizing.
It is.
It looks to be.
It is.
Dave also wants to know, how practical is it to make cheese at home? Carmela, you make cheese at home.
Yeah, I do.
Of course, yours is a Sunset View Creamery, but cheese at home.
Practicality-wise, if you're not big cheese eaters and you don't use it as a mainstay in all your meals, you can make it at home. A gallon of milk will yield you about 3/4 of a pound of cheese. So, you know, you can. And it's fun to make at home. I mean, we sell cheese kits in our store where you can make mozzarella for the kids. It takes an hour and a gallon of milk. And my sign says, a gallon of milk, an hour of your time, and a lifetime of memories. Mm-hmm. So it's fun.
See, Carmela's not going to admit this, but here's why Carmela doesn't mind having people make cheese at home. Because when they make cheese at home, they don't want to do it anymore. They just want to go back and buy it from
her. That's so true.
They get it.
So
they
true.
Get the time that goes into it. Carol, before we had just under a couple of minutes left here. The Finger Lakes Cheese Trail is 4 years old. You now have 13 members, you said?
Correct.
You launched with how many members?
We launched with
eight,
I believe.
Okay,
it was
so,
eight.
So
Carm is a founding member of the trail.
So you've seen a lot of growth in 4 years. Is there potential for more growth, and do you expect more growth on the trail?
We definitely expect more growth as we see more dairies turning to cheesemaking as a way to keep their farms sustainable. Every year we get inquiries. We try to make the trail extremely user-friendly from a business perspective. So a new cheesemaker can come in and learn the ropes from some seasoned professionals. So, yes, we do expect to see more people coming in.
Well, thank you, Carol, for being here from the Finger Lakes Cheese Trail. Carmela Hoffman from Sunset View Creamery making a long drive in maybe your busiest week of the year with the festival coming up.
Definitely.
So I appreciate that, and I know our listeners do too. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Have a great festival. Ann Duckett from the Little Blue Cheese Shop, and I'll wrap the conversation by asking you, compare the Finger Lakes industry. I always think Vermont is Vermont the capital of cheese in the country? I don't know. I don't want to slight our region, but I don't know.
They're doing quite a good job. The leading cheese making states, California, Wisconsin, Vermont, Idaho, is ahead of New York. Idaho. They should stick to potatoes. Yes. But
in terms of production, they're ahead
of
it. But in terms of quality, 20 seconds, how does the Finger Lakes stack up?
I'm honored. I started selling cheese in 2011, hopeful that people would be interested in going to one place in Rochester called a cheese shop, and we did it. And everybody does their own thing, and I'm proud.
Little Blue Cheese Shop in the South Wedge is a fun place and so welcoming. That's the key, I think. I mentioned Holly Howell and people in the wine industry. If you want to get into something, it's key to be able to do it and not feel like I've had so many ignorant questions this hour myself. I don't feel intimidated. So, and that's really a tribute to this panel and the people out there in the industry helping people feel comfortable, get more acclimated, and you do a great job with it. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right, short break. We're coming back, and we're staying on food, but we're going to look at the newest study on organic food. Is it worth paying more for it? What does the newest and the biggest study tell us? That's next.